morning.
Morning, sir.
Good morning. Before I give my talk, I'd just like to state a reminder that this Sangha, I would hope, is a safe container to make room for people of different perceptions and different opinions. But today I'm going to share my own opinion about the current state of affairs in our country, and particularly my process of trying to understand what is my part. So you probably are all aware of this, but I'm going to just go over it again, because this is all the stuff this week that has been extremely upsetting to me. So I think there have been many horrible things that are occurring to this country, but that so much is going on that sometimes we become overcome and we just tune out. It's too much. And we also feel helpless. You know, it's so overwhelming on a daily basis that it's hard to be in touch with, is there anything that I can do? And so the norm has become lying, divisiveness, misogyny, hatred, denigration of women, minorities, the handicapped, destroying the long existing norms and laws that have guided the way our government runs. And so, as I said, many of us run the risk of just shutting down. It's too much. Well, it is too much. But after that, there's the word but. You know, so just when we thought things, at least I'll speak for myself, just when I thought, how could things possibly get worse? The president and the attorney general have implemented a draconian immigration policy, which unbelievably includes separating parents and children. And these are children of all ages. And this has been done without much forethought or much caring. And our government has created this relationship between immigrants and the society where the immigrants are the other. They're not us, they're the other. And as you probably know now, there's at least 2,000 children that have already been separated from their mothers and held in detainment facilities. And some of the children are 5 years or younger old. Some are babies. And according to the detainment rules, physical contact between staff and children is to be kept at a minimum. So imagine a baby without its mother being placed in a detention center, a detainment center, where it has no physical contact. Or a two-year-old, or a three-year-old, or a four-year-old. Even the older ones, the teenagers. But the baby, to me, was the most upsetting. Not that I should be picking and choosing, because it's all horrible. So the result of this is going to be, and is already, trauma. Many of these young children are being separated from their parents when their biological assignment is to create a healthy attachment to their parents. When I think about it, it's hard for me to imagine the emotions that these kids must be going through, the fear, the anxiety, the anger, and of course, grief about what's occurring, what they are experiencing. So according to news reports, detention centers are overcrowded, what a surprise, and ill-prepared to handle the number of children being placed there. News reports also state that in Texas, the centers are so overcrowded that they are now creating a tent city in which to place the overflow. Now, the average daily temperature in Texas is 100 degrees. Imagine putting children in a tent where the average daily temperature is 100 degrees, day after day after day. The basic definition of karma is this is like this because that was like that. This is like this because that was like that. So I try to imagine, in terms of karma, what will it be like 5 to 10 years from now for these kids who have suffered this trauma? Will they live out this trauma, and how? Suicide, depression, mental illness, antisocial behavior, and even picking up a gun. So this week, the Attorney General made a biblical reference, which, of course, was self-serving. But he said that St. Paul, in Romans 13, said that laws must be obeyed because God has ordained the government for his purposes, and that the application of law itself is a good and moral thing. Now, this same section of the Bible was used to justify slavery. Also this week, at a press conference, Sarah Sanders also used the Bible to support this policy, saying that people must obey God's will. They must obey the law. She was challenged by a reporter, Brian Karam. And I think that he gave a marvelous example of how to challenge authority. Because he did it in a way that he didn't demean the person whose behavior he was objecting to. And instead, he tried to appeal to that person on a human level. He was angry. He was upset. But he didn't, in my estimation, damage the circumstances. I think he did a tremendous job of expressing how many people in this country feel, and that this is really a human thing. It's not a policy thing. So he said, these people come here traveling hundreds of miles with little water or food, most often fleeing violence in their country of origin. He's saying this to her. And of course, they come with the hope of safety and asylum. And instead, they are separated from their children, who are held in substandard detention centers. And he says to her, Sarah, you're a mother. Don't you have any empathy for these children? And her response to him was, Brian, I know you want to get a little extra time, but I have to move on. Right? Sarah, you're a mother. Don't you have any empathy? And the best our government official could say is, stop trying to get attention for yourself. Now, there was a wonderful response to all this from a Jesuit priest named James Martin when he tweeted the following. It is not biblical to treat immigrants and refugees like animals. It is not biblical to take children away from their parents. It is not biblical to ignore the needs of a stranger. It is not biblical to enforce unjust laws. And he concludes, do not use the Bible to justify sin. So for me, the question becomes, how do we respond to this? How can we respond? Well, I think I'm going to start off with making reference to the Bible. And in the Bible it says, in darkness there is light. So if this is true, there is no situation that cannot be changed. And I think that's really important. It's really important not to give up hope. This can be changed. So I'm thinking to myself, what's my own process? And I realize that I do what I was just talking about. Sometimes it's overwhelming. And I turn on the television, but not to the news. Or I go on my computer or something else to detach from this. So the question continues, which is, what can I do to bring lightness into these dark days? Thich Hanh Nhan said the following. The most important thing for those feeling despair is to remember that meeting anger with more anger only makes things worse. Be at peace with ourselves so that our actions come from a place of open-heartedness. So I think that's what the news correspondent was doing. I think there was despair that he was experiencing, but he wasn't letting anger get in the way of making his point. So the question continues, so what do I do? What do we do? And it reminded me, I don't remember where this came from, but it's a quote from somebody, which is that all we can do is our part. And to go beyond that is fantasy leading to exhaustion. So for me, that became my frame of reference. All I can do is my part. All we can do is our part. Now, of course, not everybody can respond equally. To a large degree, our part will be determined by the time, place, and circumstances in which we live. So not everybody can get on a bus and go to Washington and sit outside the Capitol. But I think each of us can find a way that we can contribute. You know, as many of you know, part of this prison project that I do with Roshi Hubrex and two of her students. And so the four of us visit the prison four times a month. And, you know, I find that, you know, sometimes you can glorify this, you know, going to the prison to help people. And really, the part that we play is small. You know, there are so many larger factors that lead somebody to be in jail. But to do nothing, I think, is to surrender our common humanity. So we go. They're in the process of taking the precepts. And we offer them a place that's safe to come and sit. We offer them sitting, which they have plenty of time to do. We reframe the circumstances that they should look at it as this place is their monastery. And at some point they will get back out and they will live in society. But in the meantime, they will use this experience to change, hopefully, their lives. So, you know, this doesn't make the front page of the New York Times. Nobody really hears about it. But it's the part that we can play, that little part of doing this. So the next thing that came up for me, okay, so this is all well and good, but what is there to guide my actions? How do I go about doing this in a constructive way? And some of this I've mentioned before, but it's part of who I am. And so what came to my mind was the Zen Peacemaker Order, and that's the order created, I think most of you are familiar with, Bernie Glassman, who's been a peacemaker throughout the world for decades. And this Peacemaker Order is guided by three tenets. And those three tenets are not knowing, which you're familiar with, bearing witness, which you're familiar with, and compassionate action. Not knowing, bearing witness, and compassionate action. So I've tried to reduce these to the simplest level for myself that I could, you know, so I don't have to, well, let me just leave it at that. So what is not knowing? What is not knowing? And in terms of doing this particular work, it means having no fixed ideas about ourselves or others. No fixed ideas about ourselves or others. And others includes everyone. Bearing witness is to become the situation with an open heart. So this is the way not knowing is connected. Right? We enter the situation not knowing, having no fixed ideas, but our heart open. And the guideline is listen first, act second. And then the third is compassionate action. And this is loving action, again, for ourselves, but also for others. Everything, everyone is included. So while we're taking this up and in getting ourselves involved in some form of social action, it's imperative that we continue to sit. And again, we don't just sit for ourselves, we sit for others. We sit to reduce the separation between ourselves and others, which causes our community suffering. So this example, which is sort of a physical demonstration, is used frequently by Bernie Glassman. And you know, in Zen we talk about the one body, and the one body means that everything is included, right? It's one body. So if you look here for a moment, right, I represent the one body. So here's those of us who share a common idea about what I'm talking about. And then over here are the people that it's impossible for us to understand. Right? But look at the space that exists between these two sides. Right? So one thing that we hope happens through meditation and working through this together is this space starts to become this space and then this space. Right? Because in reality, there is no separation. We just think there is. We think this separation exists, but it's one body. Right? But we've conceived of this idea that it's us versus them. Now, this isn't meant to say we shouldn't act, right? If this hand is going to scratch my eyes out, this hand is going to say, no, don't do that, right? So that doesn't mean that there's no action. But this action comes out of working from one body. And the other example that, I don't know, somewhere along the way I heard, and that is, if you imagine a baker baking cookies for children, and so there are giraffe cookies, and there are elephant cookies, and there are hippopotamus cookies, all different kinds of cookies, lions, tigers. So they get taken out of the oven and they get put on the table for the children. And there's this wide variety of cookies, and each child prefers his own shape and all of that. But the key to this also is that they're also made from the same dough. A wide variety of cookies, but the same dough. Now, another thing that I thought about was, we can all act as a community in terms of dealing with what's going on. Martin Luther King, I think, when he said this, was referring to this when he referred to the beloved community. We can act and at the same time take care and support each other, which is community. It becomes a place where we can acknowledge our fear, our anger, our grief. It's a place that's safe to do that, including having different ideas. It's not an exclusive community. It's a community where we welcome each other to share our experience in a safe place together. And this community we name a sangha, but there's also a church, there's a synagogue, there's a mosque. But each one of those is a community. And like has happened in the past, back in my younger days, these communities, these church, mosque, synagogue, and even in that day, sanghas came together to act in relation to circumstances. Communities support each other. So I'm going to end my sermon with the following quote by Thich Nhat Hanh. Now, I think everybody knows that he was a social activist, and he spent his life working for peace and is famous for that. And so he said, once we see something needs to be done, we must take action. Seeing and action go together. Otherwise, what is the point of seeing? Thank you.